We already have electrification strategies, energy efficiency strategies, renovations, insulation, digitalization of homes. If we make sure that we use what we have already available, we can absolutely achieve our goals.
If we want to bring down the energy consumption in the EU, there's one sector we need to be talking about specifically, and that, of course, is buildings and housing. The building sector alone accounts for 40% of energy consumption in the EU and 36% of energy-related greenhouse gas emissions. And if you zero in just on the households alone, of course, heating, cooling, and water heating are responsible already for 80% of the footprint slash energy consumption. Which, in other terms, means, of course, the potential for saving energy is enormous. It's a very complicated topic and a long way to go, but we'll dive into it in this episode. We'll also hear what kind of role smart buildings, for example, could play in solving the riddle. Welcome to the Smartery Podcast, a podcast for and with the creators of the new energy world. A world in which energy will be renewable, decentralized, and digital, bringing together electricity, heat, and mobility. Let us show you how we will get there and who will get us there. In this episode, I'll be talking to Ivanesen Ivanov, a policy analyst and currently energy and climate policy officer at Eurelectric. Eurelectric is a sector association of the European electricity industry. It represents members in more than 32 European countries and brings together more than 3,500 companies in the areas of electricity generation, distribution, and supply. It recently also launched the Power to Building Hub, so I'm sure Ivan has a lot to talk about with me. Let's jump right into the episode. Welcome, Ivan. Great to have you on board.
Hey, Zach. Thank you for having me.
So, Ivan, I already mentioned some numbers in the introduction, but in your own words, to really give us the full picture, why are buildings so important for a successful energy transition? And also, what kind of role or enabler could they be in the future?
Yeah, thank you very much for this super important and crucial question. So indeed, the European Union, as of this moment, is facing quite a serious challenge in front of itself when it comes to decarbonizing its building stock. What we're seeing in Europe is that some key figures that you mentioned in terms of the building's carbon emissions and energy usage show to us that we need to tackle this sector head on. And this is one of the hardest sectors to decarbonize, not because of the technological difficulties that we might face, but rather for a much more simple reason, and that is that this affects consumers extremely directly. And this aspect of the decarbonization of our continent is something that every single inhabitant of a building can feel very easily. And these costs, these burdens that are going to be inflicted on them, are going to have to be covered in a very flexible way. And oftentimes what we see is that the narrative is being over-dominated by the negative elements that are going to affect consumers rather than the vast amounts of positives and extreme opportunities for not only achieving energy efficiency and decarbonization that helps the climate, but also at the same time make sure that citizens have homes that are well insulated, that are sufficiently provided with energy, clean energy, and at the same time this would reduce their costs and make their buildings much more smarter, flexible, and digitalized for a new future.
Later on, we'll talk more about the technical challenges, but to me, it seems like that really is the biggest roadblock, sort of like the societal discussion and debate around it, and also how politics builds a narrative around it. So how could we go about it to really even out that roadblock or overcome that hurdle?
That is indeed the most challenging question here, because what we see currently on the European level is the negotiation of the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, which is an overarching EU directive that will have implications for all member states. And in a sense, you can imagine that the debates surrounding this are quite dynamic, and we see a lot of member states, in particular Germany and Italy, certain voices there expressing dissatisfaction with the whole existence of this directive to begin with. So they see the continuation of business as usual when it comes to Europe's building sector as the safest choice, simply because the political implications of having to enact and implement such directives like the EPBD will actually have, perhaps in the short term, not a very positive reach when it comes to these politicians' election campaigns in which they often find themselves. And this is what really fuels the spinning of narratives that are quite detrimental to an actual ambitious approach to decarbonization of buildings. And we have to be very acutely aware of this and understand that oftentimes really politics is what steers these discussions rather than an expert level evaluation of what needs to be done. Because if we look to the expert level, it is obvious. These 36% emissions generated by buildings in Europe by the data from the European Environmental Agency, as well as the 40% total energy demand from the building sector, it's a substantial number. If we want to achieve the 2050 targets of a net zero EU, we cannot go without an adequate progress when it comes to decarbonization of buildings. And this is crucial, and it needs to be stressed very, very vocally.
Now, of course, with the SMATRE being based in Germany and me being based in Germany, it makes me sad to hear that Germany is one of the two governments really being one of the major roadblocks, apparently. Now, all the other countries in Europe obviously are also run democratically with election campaigns. So how do they manage to tackle that issue and still being reelected? Somehow they seem to do a better job in narrating it or in getting their people on board. So are there some best case scenarios or a campaign that other countries can learn from?
I think it really depends to the level of political ambition in each country. Various different member states have specificities on a national level that are incomparable to those faced in other countries. At the same time, I feel that this is the role of responsible politicians, is to make sure that these hard decisions sometimes for a greater good that is not necessarily going to be delivered immediately, but more towards the future, is just as high up in the priority list as short-term benefits like lower prices and making sure that consumers' wallets are not as affected by these renovations that need to happen. So in Germany, the case is complicated, and Germany is not unique in this. So we have to understand that other countries are also aware of these challenges, and they also would prefer much rather to go down the easy track. But I think that this is the essence of why European lawmaking is so important, that it puts various different countries with various different backgrounds on the same table, and they're able to see that all of them have different burdens to overcome. All of them have specificities, but if they work together, if they make sure that we have an adequate compromise on a European level, this is going to be in the benefit of the entire bloc, and is going to be, as a consequence, massive benefit to those governments in the national parliaments as well.
So now we went a little bit deeper into the policy issue of it, but maybe we cover a little bit more the technical angle with the next questions, because how could buildings actually contribute then to reducing energy consumption or carbon emissions? Surely there are different measures we need to be talking about.
Yes, indeed. So the main hurdle here is to also align the different ways through which a building can be decarbonized and see what the most cost-efficient and the most practical way of doing it is. If we want to tackle a problem and we want to achieve it in fast, dynamic timeline, it is absolutely necessary that a prioritization of our activities is in place. So what we often say at Eurelectric is that the best type of energy is the energy that you've saved. So this is one of the main reasons why energy efficiency comes unequivocally as the top priority when it comes to making sure that newly constructed and also existing building stocks in Europe can deliver an adequate emission reduction potential in the coming years. If we make sure that the buildings that we have in Europe are isolated in such a way that no energy is wasted, this means that we've already tackled half of the problem. especially when it comes to energy poor households and areas where large amounts of clean power generation is not necessarily always easily available, there these energy efficiency measures can come into place and basically carry a bit of the heavy lift. The problem with energy efficiency measures is that these require renovations, oftentimes deep renovations. So in order to make those happen, this means that, simply put, a lot of cash needs to be invested. And here comes the big question of who and how is going to spend these money. Public authorities across the European Union have access to vast resources, and it is completely understandable that these investments will most likely come from the public sector in terms of investments, in terms of grants for energy poor households, and it will help carry this heavy lift from some of the most vulnerable consumers. At the same time, we also need to make a good business case for the renovation of buildings. A lot of the constructors and renovators in the sphere are small and medium-sized enterprises, so we need to make sure that their business case is also there. Happy to elaborate on some of the other main important topics of decarbonizing buildings past energy efficiency as well.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask about that, but you also mentioned that energy efficiency might already be half of the cake. So is 50% literally the number we're talking about?
Well, when it comes to the percentage in particular, this severely depends on the circumstances of the particular building. So depending on the country, depending on the region, if we're talking about a building that is more localized in an urban area or in a rural area, if this is a building that is self-sufficient, and for example, the energy needs are met by on-site production or off-site production, these are super large amount of variables that really are going to make the case-by-case structure for each individual building. But as a rule of thumb, energy efficiency is the first priority when it comes to removing the vast chunk of emissions that are generated by these buildings and that are, in practice, wasted emissions in the most blunt sense of the word, because this is energy wasted for nothing. It doesn't deliver anything. If we're talking about the carbon emissions generated from certain energy generators, then that's, in essence, an energy that is at least produced and is going somewhere. But when we're talking about energy efficiency, this is practically making sure that the wasted energy is removed from the equation.
All right. So what other measures could we talk about?
So I touched upon a little bit about how power generation is a crucial element here as well. And that is indeed the case, because the life cycle of the building, when it comes to its construction, when it comes to its operation, and one day its demolition, is a big element of the emission creation potential for buildings. But at the same time, it's also crucial to understand how exactly these buildings are going to be powered in order to make sure that they don't produce, first of all, any on-site emissions. And second of all, these are buildings that have energy security and resilience to meet various challenges that they're being faced up, especially in a raging energy crisis, and also currently in a situation where the European Union is trying to transition away from fossil fuels imported from Russia. In a sense, all of this means that clean power generation, producing carbon-free electricity and delivering it to buildings, electrifying buildings, is going to be a crucial component. Eurelectric talks often about direct electrification as the most cost-efficient, energy-efficient way to decarbonize buildings. And this is true, proven by various different studies. If we look at the ways through which a building can reduce its emissions via electrification, it is unmatched in terms of its potential. We need to make sure that we have on-site generation of renewable energy, this means solar PV, in cooperation, in basically a complementary way of work with buildings that are connected to the grid and have access to electricity delivered in vast amounts, clean, carbon-free electricity from the grid. Why is this important? This is important because, on the one hand, we prioritize clean energy production on-site. So a lot of buildings in a warm Spanish summer, for example, can provide all of their energy needs from the solar panels on the roof. But let's say that we're in a cold winter morning somewhere in the outskirts of Copenhagen, and the power generated from the solar panels on the roof is simply not enough to power maybe a heat pump, to charge an electric vehicle, and also use your oven, let's say. And that's the case when we need connected to the grid buildings, which can harness all of the energy, let's say, from the offshore wind plant that is located in Denmark on the coast of the North Sea, and make sure that that energy reaches the building exactly when it's needed.
Now, you talked a lot about the measures and the sort of energy production. How important is it that all of this happens in a smart and connected way?
Indeed, making sure that buildings are digitalized, making sure that buildings are smart, is one of the enablers for them to become clean and decarbonized as fast as possible. We often talk as well about the digitalization of the grid, creating a digital copy of the grid. This is a crucial thing that is going to create a basis for all of these buildings to be connected in a smart way and to have a grid connection at the exact place where it's needed to monitor the energy needs of every building. And at the same time, by fostering smart solutions in the house itself, we can make sure that internally the home can follow all of the energy expenditures that it has. At the same time, this can also show a very good picture of how, for example, a heat pump works in the building, or how the localized renewable energy production is exacerbated, and at the same time, for example, the charging patterns of an electric vehicle, which we're going to see more and more connected to these smart homes.
Now, earlier we talked about some of the policy challenges. Are there some technical challenges or other roadblocks we would need to tackle in order to really implement everything that you just talked about in the last minutes?
Indeed, technical challenges are always present, but when it comes to the building sector, I'm very hopeful and optimistic, and I really want to say that here, maybe it's one of the areas where we really don't need to reinvent the wheel. Here we have a key bundle of measures that, if implemented correctly, can really make a vast difference as soon as they are put into place. So this is not something that we need to do and hope for a vast technological breakthrough to help us in this fight. No, we already have electrification strategies, energy efficiency strategies, renovations, insulation, digitalization of homes. If we make sure that we use what we have already available, we can absolutely achieve our goals.
Now, just a while ago, you also mentioned that, of course, the question is who's going to finance this, because it's going to require a massive amount of resources. So is maybe one challenge to have the proper funding schemes, supporting schemes and subsidy schemes?
Indeed, I fully believe that the way in which this transition is going to happen is if we have the harnessing of financial instruments where they're needed the most. This can present, again, as I stated a bit earlier, investments directly from the EU's budget or investments from national member states' budget. As we know, in various different countries across Europe, there has been renovation waves that have been heavily subsidized by the governments, by local governments as well, because this is in fact in the best interest of these municipalities, of these regions, to make sure that their buildings are energy efficient and smart. So this is a great business case for them, and this is what is going to pour more and more investments into the sector. At the same time, we need to make sure that all of the different chains of industry connected to buildings also have a viable market-based business case in going for the green transition, and I think that this can be achieved with the right form of investment schemes.
So let's imagine that actually communities, cities, municipalities decide to really make these vast resources available in order to invest them. For example, if we look here in Germany, there's really such a literally heated debate around the whole energy topic, around heat pumps specifically. And originally the government wanted to revise the Building Energy Act, the GEG, but there is just so much skepticism amongst the people that even if the money would be available, I think they'd not be so happy to invest it.
This is true, and we need to have a really set out plan to tackle the problem that comes with perception. So, for example, with heat pumps, the case for them is absolutely clear. Heat pumps are the most efficient energy solution for heating and cooling buildings. In a sense, if we look at the hard and concrete data, heat pumps often outperform gas boilers by more than 3 times. Yet what we see is that with heat pumps, we have upfront costs that are often the element that brings confusion and distress to consumers. But if we actually expand the narrative a little bit more and don't really over-focus on particular elements that bring political spice to the conversation, and we look in more concrete, pragmatic terms, the life cycle of a heat pump is actually much more cost-efficient for the consumer. And at the same time, we mustn't forget that still on the European level, we have financial incentives for gas boilers. So this is a massive bottleneck for the further penetration of heat pumps because we're still subsidizing gas boilers. So if we stop that and we focus this investment to tackling the upfront costs of heat pumps, actually consumers are going to see very clearly that they're the most cost-efficient and energy-efficient solution that they have.
So this really needs to be tackled from various angles, reducing subsidies in certain areas, moving them to other areas. That, of course, really needs the combined lobbying effort of the renewables industry to really make their voice heard in Brussels. Which brings me to the next topic. In the introduction, I also mentioned that Eurelectric just launched the Power to Buildings Business Hub. Maybe you can give us a little pitch. Why do we need it? Why is it important? And who's already part of it?
Exactly. This is one of the reasons why Eurelectric established our Power to Buildings Hub. This is a peer-to-peer community between experts in the industry who gather together and who dive very deep into these different topics that we have been discussing with you now. And this is, in essence, how Eurelectric sees as the sector organization of the electricity industry the best way forward for us to sit down together to discuss all of these intricacies and see the best way to achieve our goals here. So the Power to Buildings Hub really unites various different players, from tech companies to energy companies to smart solution providers, from distribution system operators. So we have really the whole value chain of different players that are invested in this field. And we also make sure to facilitate dialogue with policymakers, with municipal authorities, and to make sure that this debate is really hosted at a very high level where all the different concerns of the different stakeholders can be addressed adequately. We're happy to say that this is an initiative that has seen a lot of success, and we're really not surprised to say that, because in fact this is something that really gathers more and more attention into European society, and we see a projection of developing that business hub a lot in the coming years.
Now, of course, we're on a tight timeline. I mean, if we are talking about our climate goals until 2030 already, so only in 6.5 years by the time we record this podcast, at the moment it really doesn't look like we're on track. So how can we really accelerate that, or how can we implement decarbonization in the building sector fast enough? Because we're also talking about, of course, huge cycles, life cycles of all the assets.
Yes, Zach, you have pointed the question to an element which is really something that we like to highlight very often on a reoccurring basis, because usually in Brussels, when we work on energy and climate policy, we kind of get bogged down with some of the intricacies and fail from time to time to really grasp the big picture. And the big picture is this, and it is that our climate is changing. Our climate is changing rapidly, and we need to make sure that the adequate actions here are implemented. The European Green Deal, as a flagship set of proposals, basically has already set an ambitious agenda for our union. And we really hope to see the finalization of files like the EPBD, which are one of the last remaining ones from the Fit for 55 package. And we hope that once we already have that legislative framework set, we're going to be able to really accelerate when it comes to implementation. Because just as a reminder, we still have some legislative provisions on the European level from the clean energy package that are still not implemented within member states. So really, for the next commission's mandate, we need to make sure that all of those provisions that we have written on paper and that we have agreed on are going to actually be implemented. So implementation really is the key, and making sure that we also put on board all the other enabling factors. So we have the case of the grids. We need to make sure that Europe has resilient grids that are going to be able to accommodate all of that clean power generation to enact the green transition. At the same time, security of supply. At the same time, making sure that all of this reaches in the end to the final consumer and they see the benefit from the green transition. So it's a really holistic approach, which, if I can put into one word, it is really making sure that all of these measures for efficiency efficiency and electrification are adequately implemented in a timely manner. If we manage to do that in the course of the next commission, which is going to run until 2029, we're going to be just in time for the revision of a lot of these flagship proposals for the next time period, which is going to be in 2040, so that we can achieve the ever more ambitious target set for then.
Well, Ivan, it's been an immense pleasure talking to you remotely while we record this. It's October. Hopefully, I'll see you in person at EM Power Conference Europe in 2024. That would be in half a year's time. And maybe then you could already report on some major progress having been made in the next months. That would be awesome. Thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Zach. Pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
You can find the latest developments and innovations in prosumer and power to building at EM Power Europe, the international exhibition for energy management and integrated energy solutions. Make sure to not only check out the exhibition, but also EM Power Europe conference taking place at the same time. More information about both events in June 2024 in Munich can be found online at em-power.eu.